Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside.
Howdy, howdy. Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast. This is Paulie and Tommy. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Mate, very, very kind. And actually, you know what? It is. It is a pleasure for you to have me. There's a lot to like about me.
I like that. That's very effective communicating, which brings me to exactly what we're going to be talking about. And I thought we'd address it straight in the bullseye because we're talking about effective communication, whether it's at the workplace, in a family household, with your significant other, with friends. There's so much dancing around certain topics that the power of communication can really get lost in, potentially feeling like you might be hurting somebody's feelings or not feeling like you can truly kind of get to what the sense and the soul of what you want to be able to address. So I'm looking forward to communicating about this communication.
Mate, me too. It's the one conduit that we have to being able to understand each other's experience. And it is prioritized to a degree, but I mean, it's got to be the absolute fundamental thing that we should. There should be a communication class from prep to year 12, you know, and we should have that developmentally and gradually, you know, increased to the degree that we can handle that, because it should be the thing and the tool that we all have under our belts at all times.
It's so much in not just being able to get what you want out of life, and I don't mean that in a, you know, like a, in an ugly way. I mean, being able to get what you and the person that you're communicating with out of, like, a win-win scenario. And the only way that happens is with effective communication, because right. It's so easy to come to a situation with like a defensive mindset. The moment that happens, no one's winning.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, what you just said there is a fantastic segue into self-awareness, I suppose, to begin with, because more often than not, when we do come to these situations with defensive mindsets, anger, fear, when we're triggered by things, we're not aware of any of that. That's just how we respond. Mm-hmm. And then when you learn more about yourself, you realize that whatever the other person said, if you know, affected you on a subconscious level, because maybe there was a time in your life when that led to some sort of physical or emotional pain, you know, a lack of validation, a lack of love or support. So no wonder, you know, your primal being is going to defend you against that, because it fears that the same might happen again. So self-awareness is absolutely intrinsic to being a good communicator.
Take me through this, Tommy. So let's use an example to be able to illustrate what you just said there. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. So, you can picture a relationship situation where, you know, let's just say, for example, I always, whenever I'm working with couples, I always use washing the dishes as an example, because to me, it's something that we can all kind of find funny. It's so subtle, trivial, you know, it's almost cliche as well, but it's kind of funny, you know. So you can picture a scenario where someone comes home from work, they're really buggered, and they come home, they're starving. The dishes are still out because the other person, the other partner hadn't washed them. Who knows whose responsibility it was, because they haven't had that conversation yet. It's just one of those under the carpet sort of situations. The person is resentful because they now have to clean the dishes on top of making their own food. It's been a long day. No one's perfect. But because they're unaware as to that resentment, or they're a little bit, you know, they're just kind of buggered. They come to the other person like, and they say, hey, you know, what happened with the dishes? Now, already you might suggest unless it was explicitly stated that it was the other person's responsibility to do those dishes, they could have come across in a less aggressive way, you know, something akin to, how was your day? You know, find out why the dishes hadn't been done yet. Anyway, that's a side point.
Got
They come home and they see the dishes and they say, hey, why hasn't the dishes been done yet? Now, immediately the other person feels a bolt of fear because in their home life, when they were kind of 8 or 10, they saw a lot of physical abuse. Their parents weren't good communicators. Their the dishwashing, although trivial, was a point of massive conflict in the relationship and would often lead to perhaps the dad, you know, beating the wife, or perhaps the other way around, the wife becoming very icy and cold, or even beating the husband as well. Who knows? In other words, any conflict that surrounds the washing of the dishes is a highly threatening affective situation for this other partner. So they respond subconsciously in a protective state. Well, I don't know. Fuck you. You know, something like that. And all of a sudden, bang, there's this massive conflict. And the washing of the dishes is a symptom of just each partner's inability to recognize their own patterns and traumas. So one who's a little bit more self-reflective, and it takes a lot of skill and practice, and you got to stumble up the mountain, as Jordan Peterson says. I really love that analogy. You know, keep falling down, but you are getting there.
I like it.
A better situation is even in the beginning. Hey, you know what I'm like with the dishes? My body just responds in a lot of stress. Can you give me 15 minutes to just breathe all this out, and then I'll come back again? The other part might say, hey, I totally recognize that I kind of brought work home. Let me breathe that out. I'll hit the boxing bag for a little bit, and then we can have a conversation. But really, unmet needs. Someone wasn't aware that they had to do the dishes on that person's time. The other person just wanted to have some food. So it is interesting.
It is, and I suppose the resolution that you offer there is beautiful because it's offering and announcing a certain level of vulnerability. It's saying, I actually just need your support for just a period of time because you're my significant other, and I need to just digest this day. And the very act of being able to announce that from a vulnerable, open, asking for support position versus this defensive, space and anger that comes from, and there's no source of fault in and amongst these two people that are having this argument. It's just the sole communication, and the act of communication can create two completely different results from this conflict. And as a result of that, it can actually span into a really, really unhealthy path that a relationship can take versus an incredibly supportive path that a relationship can take, because that can turn into, I don't know, the garbage being taken out, or feeling rejected because of a physical advance that one partner wanted to have later that night. There are so many different repercussions that can take place because of this. But if you have like a foundational system of communication that you're talking about, and I feel like that was a wonderful example, but it's like, how do we create a framework for, and let's just use couples, significant others. How do we use a framework of respectful communication, but also openness and empathy and vulnerability, so you can really, really like be open, bare naked, and safe in each other's kind of company, so you can grow together and actually blossom into something that is even better every day.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a leap of faith to place your trust in someone else, knowing that as a human being who exists upon a spectrum of good and evil, they could turn around one day and really betray your trust, you know? And so that is a leap of faith in that regard. But I think what both partners need to bring to the table is this forthright almost line in the sand that, I am going to practice and learn about emotional intelligence, which is just the ability to feel a certain feeling without necessarily reacting to it. And even just in the beginning, feeling a certain way and really feeling it is akin to not judging the way you feel and owning that, because often we judge the way we feel all the time. Some people judge their own sexual desires. People can't stand the fact that they always get teary in a certain movie. People can't stand that something that really is trivial and innocuous makes them very angry. But feeling that firstly and going, this is how I'm feeling, it means that it's not projected subconsciously. I think in the very beginning, I mean, practically, I'm such a big believer in couples counseling because it puts someone in between the two. And just to go, oh, that's funny, when you're saying that, does that make you feel A, B, and C? And then the other person says, yeah, okay, oh, so that's an unmet need there. That's really interesting. And isn't that interesting that because you're feeling that way, you feel this way? And so what we're trying to do is put the pieces together and go, this is why we're feeling like this. And even just the willingness for both parties to say, you know what, let's do couples counseling, means that they're willing to learn and improve the situation. And it's a first step on lots of steps, but you don't have to do it. You don't have to do couples counseling if you guys can figure this out. But what do you think, mate? What do you think is good skills?
Well, on couples counseling, just because you mentioned it, I think you can approach it from a couple of different angles. Like, I think a lot of people approach the potential of couples counseling as fixing something that is broken, or the potential to make something so unbelievably strong and powerful and
Nice.
impenetrable and malleable and flexible, because you guys are so not just aware of your own emotional tendencies and resilience, but the partnership's emotional flexibility and flaws and vulnerabilities. Once you bring some a skilled worker into that room to be able to facilitate that, you just open up a whole new world where you're just like, it's almost like you can speak a different language with each other then,
And I really love that point that you made. And I think, and I'd actually be really interested to hear your perspective on this, is that part of the reason why couples counseling is stigmatized and it's viewed as, oh my God, where you only go to couples counseling if, as you said, something's broken. Maybe it's because psychologist, counselor, therapy, these kind of loaded terms. But what we're really talking about is coaching in this degree, in this area, because coaching, in my opinion, the kind of positive associations that come with coaching is the wanting to improve, like a gym coach, a trainer. No one stigmatizes those. In fact, everyone's like, yeah, cool, awesome, you want to improve. Maybe we need to change the terms a little bit.
No, it's a really valid point that you raise, and if you're a high performance athlete, every high performance athlete has a coach, right?
Right.
Do you guys want to be a high performance couple?
Right. Exactly.
You don't need to be recovering from surgery. If we use this same analogy, you don't need to be recovering from a broken leg to be able to retrain your ability to walk. To have coaching, you can fly to the moon and back as a couple.
Right. And you can. And I think this is what that's a really important point for couples out there. There are a lot of these generalizations, it's like, oh, after marriage, it's like, yeah, the honeymoon phase, that was in the past, and it doesn't have to be. I mean, it changes. A lot of what's honeymoon, it's in the honeymoon is just you guys are just on drugs, dopamine
Totally.
skyrocketing, oxytocin skyrocketing, like it's a drug. It is a drug,
100%.
but it can shift. And you sacrifice a little bit of that pleasure for a whole heap of intimacy. And you don't sacrifice all of the pleasure, but it becomes more meaningful. You learn more about the other person and you've got a partnership. And yeah.
think a lot of people feel guilty that they don't look at their partner the same way as regularly or as often as they did when they first...
When they were on drugs.
Because you're on drugs. You're
right.
Literally on MDMA.
Yep.
Like, for you know, 6 months.
Right, exactly. It's a big trip.
It's a massive trip. And sometimes there's a come down.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think when you go through changes like that, having new things to be excited by, new goals to pull the relationship forward is really important. And I think this whole idea that, you know, our society is very much woven into the concept of relationships is, in the beginning, it's all wonderfully exciting. And who knows, the final goal being marriage, we could get there. But then what about after? Everyone just goes, you know, and it's like, what about other goals that are bringing you forward? I mean, we have to remember neurochemically that goals that excite us are massive drivers for the dopamine system, which is where our excitement and pleasure comes from fundamentally. So you can get some of that honeymoon stuff back into the relationship if you're conscious about it.
So let's get practical here, okay? So let's say a couple has just gone through that holiday period. They literally cannot keep their hands off of each other for like 6 months. Like they have not come up for air. Like DNA is just all over the place.
Yeah, right? That's right.
and you know, things are starting to cool off now, and they step into a long-term relationship, and all of a sudden this fire that they, you know, had referenced in the honeymoon period is no longer burning as brightly. How do we reignite that fire? How do we start to find the appeal, the power, the fire in our relationship that was once there?
Well, this is exactly where communication comes in, you know. And, you know, just as a quick tangent, something that I also see with people now is that they bring this heavy set communication too early into the relationship when it should just be about fun and sex and, you know, not giving a shit and, you know, yeah. People go, what are your traumas? What are your, you know, it's just like, that's too heavy for the beginning, you know?
Absolutely.
You can entertain it lightly, but you don't want to put that on someone else when you want them to be excited by you and miss you and so forth. So, you know, you don't want to do that too early, but when the communication starts to become really apparent, that's when you can start to have these conversations in a lighthearted, you know, albeit serious way. It's tell me about your sexual needs, you know. I'd love to hear about what keeps your cups filled in these domains. You know, what are you excited by in the future? What are you building towards? Because we all need our own sense of purpose and drive, but the relationship needs that as well. Because otherwise there's no point in having the relationship. If you guys aren't growing together through honesty, through love, through service to one another, perhaps through service to your local communities or whatever it is you do, there is almost by definition no point in the relationship other than perhaps sexual transactions, you know?
You're spot on. You know, when – I don't know if I mentioned this to you on a previous podcast, but – when me and my wife got married, we were married by a rabbi. We're both Jewish. And this rabbi happens to be coming on our show in the coming weeks.
Yep.
But he said something, I believe it was him, to us when we were getting married. And he was, you know, you were talking about like sexual desire and all that kind of stuff. He said, don't let one awkward conversation, potentially awkward conversation in the bedroom or outside of the bedroom lead to an entire lifetime of unsatisfied communication. You know, that is insanity. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, you know, you've got to get the sexual component right. You know, for a lot of relationships, that's what initially brings them together. And then to pretend or come under this false narrative that, you know, it dies when the honeymoon phase dies is just ridiculous, you know. And part of it is honesty and being brave enough to let the other person know what turns you on, what you like, what you perhaps even like to explore. And you can do this in really powerful de-escalating, ways. Oftentimes it's just because we're talking about the sexuality component here. When the rivers run dry, so to speak, one partner is either resentful because they're not having their sexual needs met. The other one is too, although they're the ones that are kind of pulling back because they don't feel turned on and in the mood. So for the person who's resentful, I have a tendency to believe that resentment is our own responsibility, and we need, and it dies in the face of expression. And what we can do
Yeah,
is
I like that.
say, hey, what turns you on? A question that I got from Tom Bilyeu as well is, what did I used to do that I don't do anymore that you'd like me to do again? Because it invites them to tell you, as opposed to you saying, you don't do this enough and we need to be doing this more. It's a really great way to invite that conversation without putting the other in the wrong.
Sure is, and reminds me of something that Alex Hormozis,
Homozy, yeah.
Hormozy once said. I think I just saw it as a flash come up. He said, "If you want to be a really great partner, you just go up to your significant other and say, in a perfect world, in a perfect day, if I was doing things that was your perfect partner and perfect husband, what are the things that you would like me to do?"
Yes.
And that person will tell you what it is. And you said,
Right.
just do that every day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then you've got to do it. You can't just ask. That's like the first step. That makes it really hard.
I mean, like, and it's like, it's said in jest. I don't think it is said in jest, actually, but like, depending on what the requests are, like, cut off your arm.
Exactly. Like, I suppose.
Okay, why?
Maybe we should do couples counseling.
Exactly, but we're not broken.
No, that's right. My arm is.
Anyway, it's sometimes I feel like the path from A to B can be really direct, and I love the way he described that because it was so simple and it was so direct. It's like, ask your partner what they like. How do they like to be treated? How do they like to be treated in the bedroom? How do they like to be treated emotionally? And then do it.
Exactly. And you might even say, hey, I don't actually even know how to do that. I was never given the tools as a child to understand my emotions, to talk about how I feel. What does that even mean? I don't know what you mean when you say that you want me to do that, but I'm going to go and learn. Do you have people that you follow in mind? Let me know. I want to learn, And it might feel a bit tedious and you might be going into unexplored territory, but that is also part of the growth that happens in relationships, is that the other person will take you and the relationship to uncharted territory. And to really wind this out, you don't want the relationship to be comfortable. You don't want it to be ridiculously uncomfortable, but you want it to be an adventure, because then you can look back on it and go, oh my God, I did not expect us to wind up here. And yet here we are. And thank you. That was amazing.
Yeah, very cool. You want to be challenged by your partner. You want to go on an adventure with them. And I think that's a wonderful place to kind of wind this down, because you don't want to write your entire script from the beginning of the story, because that's boring.
Exactly. That's exactly right, mate. I mean, we do that in this show. We make sure not to write the script because we don't know where the hell it's going to take us.
And I feel like if we did write the script, it would be a bit shit.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good place to finish.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming along with for our kind of tangents and unscripted, beautiful dribble at times.
Crikey.
Love it.